After an unfortunate delay of 5 years, Samuel J. Gummery was chosen principal. And when, in 1864, his title was changed to president, the name of Haverford appeared for the first time among the colleges and universities in the United States listed in the National Almanac. Under his wise and gentle leadership, the college survived the Civil War. His death in 1874 marked the end of the first period of our history, the 40 years, more or less, of provincial Haverford, in which the institution, with impossible methods of supervision, was groping for a policy. Even in the 27 years since its revival in 1848, it had hardly changed in essentials. And its size, if anything, had shrunk. The total annual enrollment, all four classes, averaging 51. A truly small college, little known in the rest of the country. As an observer remarked in 1876, a quiet air of peaceful seclusion pervades the venerable college. The observer did not know, however, that there were stirrings within. The first signs of a new era of expansion, pointing up a faith in Haverford's manifest destiny, began to show themselves in 1875, when Thomas Chase, now well provided with textbook royalties from the famous Chase and Stuart Latin series, had been elevated to the presidency. And his friend, Jacob P. Jones, neither a Haverfordian nor a Quaker, but later Haverford's first massive benefactor, had taken the ambitious step of promoting a subscription fund of $80,000 for a huge new dormitory. By this means, the college acquired the enormous granite pile of Barclay Hall. It was opened in 1877 with accommodations for 80 students at a time, believe it or not, when the enrollment was down to 43, including only four freshmen. It was fondly hoped that the greater comfort of Barclay Hall would have a soothing effect on student deportment. But alas, the long, long corridors proved even better adapted to cannonball bowling and soap slides than the restricted area of founders, and the position of the successive superintendents became even more hellish. In 1886, Thomas Chase resigned the presidency. His first appointee had been Isaac Sharpless, who in 1875, at the age of 26, was made professor of mathematics and began to solve the problem of how to make use of the strength of Quakerdom without succumbing to its fanaticism. Actually, as youngest officer of instruction, he was a sort of man Friday, and for 8 strenuous years taught many subjects and frequently acted as disciplinary superintendent. It must have been then that he began to develop his native wit and shrewdness and acquire his celebrated powers of clairvoyance into the student mind. Behold him in 1884 in the earliest picture of the faculty. He's at the lower right, surrounded by the 80 students, more or less, of the college. In this year, the managers, recognizing his administrative abilities, made him the first dean of Haverford College in a unique and extraordinary sense of that word. That is, manager of everything. All the finances and business, including appointments, even of the president, as well as salaries and duties of the faculty and employees, tuition, admission of students, and whatnot, for which he was guaranteed a small salary and all the profits of the institution up to a generous percentage. He did magnificently and derived a handsome income from this business venture, even though he was too late to tap the profitable preparatory department, for it had already become the semi-independent Haverford College Grammar School. But after 2 years, he wisely decided that this was no proper way to run a college. In 1887, he was elected president. In certain aspects, the history of any college inevitably falls into periods which do not correspond to presidential regimes. In relation, for instance, to the growth of the surrounding community, the semi-centennial in 1883 must be taken as marking the end of rural Haverford. And 2 years later occurred a great event for Haverford: the founding of Bryn Mawr College. Although, for many years, our sister college, officially at least, and under her Amazonian second president, remained somewhat chilly, save for a brief defrosting at the fire in Denby. But ultimately, the most cordial relations were established. Let us now return to 1887. The aim of the new president was to make Haverford a unique suburban college, adapted to the needs of the modern world. In this, he was supported from the first by a remarkable faculty. Behold the old guard. On the president's left, Alan C. Thomas in history, and for 36 years librarian, and Lyman B. Hall in chemistry. On his right, Seth K. Gifford in Greek, Francis B. Gummery in English, Haverford's most widely known scholar, and Frank Morley in mathematics. Rendell Harris, who missed this picture, was in the Near East collecting manuscripts as usual. These men set a standard of scholarship unequaled by any small college in America. Haverford's primacy has recently been very much in the news. Leadership is, of course, a relative matter. Compared with other small colleges, Haverford in the 1890s was without a peer in pure scholarship. In publishing the 12 volumes of Haverford College Studies from 1889 to 1893, Haverford actually anticipated by a year or two the nationwide flowering of learned journals and academic research in the early 90s. Omitting the professional schools of law and medicine and making a rough general comparison as of 1890, Haverford College Studies is easily on a par with the scholarly serials, at that date still relatively few, of the chief universities. This was an extraordinary record. Behold, from number three, the conclusion of Morley's article on some properties of the triangle, and plate one of the edition by Rendell Harris and Seth Gifford of the greatest historical text in patristic literature, The Martyrdom of Saints Perpetua and Felicitas. Among many notable appointments by President Sharpless, two must receive a special mention. In 1893, he called Rufus M. Jones, to whose influence over the years we are largely paying tribute in this celebration of the 125th anniversary. And in 1897, he brought to the Department of Romance Languages William Wister Comfort, destined to play an outstanding role in the history of Haverford. Let us also record the appointment of one who typifies the essential simplicity of the old college, the indomitable Oscar M. Chase, stiff-collared but not stiff-necked, tobogganist, bicycle rider, and in his later years, autoist of distinction, with one car for sunny days, another for rainy. Connoisseur and collector of phonograph records. Proud holder of the chair of mechanical drawing. For many years, a phenomenal one-man administrative staff, as well as cashier of faculty checks at all hours.